All right, and that is the new single by Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, Moody Blues lead guitarist, vocalist, and composer Justin Hayward. It's called Living for Love. Justin is currently kicking off his Voice of the Moody Blues UK tour, and he's taking out some time tonight to join us here on WGN Radio. Justin, thank you for joining us.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be with you, Dave.
Just the lyrics behind this new song. I'm driving through the land we knew to find that sacred ground where moonlight on the innocence wildest dreams were found. We lay there till the break of day, lovers, me and you. I had to give my heart away. What else could I do? It was really reflecting on your teenage years. Life was simpler, your whole life ahead of you. It was really what inspired the lyrics in the song, isn't it?
I think so, yes. I mean, I think every writer looks back to their teenage years so formative musically as well. And I think particularly my own generation, growing up through the sort of late 50s and then 60s, it was a time of optimism and confidence, and everybody was moving forward, determined that there should never be another war like there had been. Right. And I think, you know, if you were in a loving family like me and my brother and my sister, you know, that we could just think about music. We were free to think about music. In fact, we could always get a job. That was one of the most important things. So it was kind of, you always had something to fall. You know, you could always work in an office if the music thing didn't work out. But the music that we were listening to was so kind of formative in those years. And I know my brother and I, we owned maybe three records, but we knew friends who had three records. And then you'd go to somebody's house and you could make a whole night of listening to music just with your friends and their records, you know, and that's what being young is about. But there's also references in this song to my life now. And I'm just consider myself very lucky to be able to be true to my goals of making music live and recording. You know, I'm very lucky for that. And you know, there's a lot of love, man, in music.
Yeah, there's nice. No question. No question. Yeah. I know you were talking about like getting an office job while you make it or break it or whatever it might be. But many artists earlier in their career took other jobs until they made it. You never had a day job, so to speak. This has been your life, right?
No, that's right. That's right. Yeah. And God forbid that I should ever have to do anything else, but I was totally useless. I might be able to work in a guitar shop.
But, okay, that's fair. All right, that's fair.
Yeah. Because... that's about it. I did work in an office for about 2 months after I left school, but I was in groups in my hometown, and then I was just answering advertisements in the paper for things. And you know, I got lucky with Marty Wild and again with the Moody's, really.
Yeah, you really do credit Marty for those early years and really getting you into the Moody Blues. I mean, you pretty much answered an ad.
I did. I answered an advertisement in a paper called The Melody Maker, and it said, named singer seeks guitar player. I was answering about 20 ads a week.
Yeah, okay.
But this one, somebody actually replied, and I went up to an audition in East London, and Marty Wild opened the door. Now, Marty, in case anybody around there doesn't know, Marty Wild is Kim Wild's father, but Marty was a big rock and roll hero. Mm-hmm. And you know, in those great days between 59 and kind of 66, was really at the up there with Cliff and the Shadows, and still is. Marty is still touring on the road now, but he told me survive in the business, you got to write your own songs. And he was, I loved him then. He was a mentor then and still is today, to this day.
We're talking to Justin Hayward. His new single is Living for Love. He's currently on tour, and we will spend some more time with this Rock and Roll Hall of Famer right after this on 720 WGN. State Player, 720 WGN. We're talking to Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, Moody Blues lead guitarist, vocalist, composer Justin Hayward. His new single is called Living for Love. You know, within a few years of the Moody Blues coming together and you joined the band in 66, Days of Future Past was the second album for the Moody Blues. Nights in White Satin was and still is the top single ever for the Moody Blues. You wrote and composed the song in your late teenage years, inspired by a girlfriend who gave you satin bed sheets, and you used that as a metaphor for the song.
You know, I was at the... I've been asked so many times to explain this song, and I'm not even sure myself. It's okay. A curious thing in your life to have to look back to about 4 minutes that happened to you in a little room in West London one night.
Right.
And I've tried to explain it, but I'm not even sure, because in the 60s, nobody else asked you what a song was about. It was just like, oh, but that's what it is, you know. But I was at the end of one big love affair and at the beginning of another. And when you're that age, that stuff is really important to you.
Right.
And I just wrote the two verses. And, you know, I don't think anybody in the Moody Blues, I don't think we ever thought that anybody would hear this stuff. We were just on our way to doing something. And the opportunity to record Days of Future Past came along. It was an idea of the record company. And it was a lucky day for us when they did approach us for this project, you know. So,
that's pretty cool. I know. And you taught yourself how to play the guitar after you learned how to play the ukulele, right?
Well, maybe a lot of kids, when they pester their parents for a guitar, parents will say, hey, here's a $5 ukulele first.
Yeah.
And that's pretty easy. Ding, 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 ding is the tuning. But it's the same as the top four strings of a guitar, except the bottom string of a uke is an octave higher.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can play the uke, you're well on the way to playing a chord of G.
We're talking to Justin Hayward of the Moody Blues. His new single is Living for Love. He's currently on tour. And we'll spend some more time with this Rock and Roll Hall of Famer after the news next here on 720 WGN. State Player, 720 WGN. We're talking to Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, Moody Blues lead guitarist, vocalist, composer Justin Hayward. His new single is called Living for Love. When diving into music, I know you were inspired by, you know, Buddy Holly and Elvis, but what made sense to me is you had mentioned Johnny Ray, and recognized for his jazz and blues influenced music. You know, he was really, his music was a precursor to what eventually became rock and roll.
I think that's right. Yeah. Do you know, Dave, you're the only person to mention that. And, because I heard him, could have only been about 5 years old, mm-hmm. and there was something, that cry in his voice, that break in his voice, really kind of got me. And I think the industry was quite cruel to him, actually, over the years, but he really had something, a kind of lonely, he was in a sort of lonely place, which really struck home with me. And do you think many people know who Johnny Ray was?
No, I don't. No, I don't. No. But when you say lonely place, blues, I mean, that does make great sense.
Yeah, it was a kind of eerie kind of sound on his records and in his voice. And so many influences from that time. But you're right. We mentioned Buddy. And then, of course, I'd heard of Elvis, but... And I'd heard a couple of things on the radio, but it wasn't until I heard Buddy Holly that I was able to focus on what I wanted to do, really. Easy, three chords. He didn't have to stand out the front. He was in a group. He was writing songs for a group, and he was singing with a group, and he was playing the guitar. It all just, that's made it so right somehow. Yeah.
Yeah, no question. Well, you know, it's funny, like when you joined the Moody Blues, you know, you were kind of there. The band itself was kind of seeking a new direction. It was a time that all realized that they needed to reboot a bit. And someone who attended a concert of yours knocked on the dressing room door and told you how he felt about the band. It was kind of a wake-up call, wasn't it?
Because we were at a doing a gig up north. In fact, we were doing like they were like cabaret. They're called working men's clubs, and our price had really dropped to about $30 a night, just enough to be able to buy the gas to get us there. And there was a knock on the door. And this guy came in, and we had no idea. And he said, I thought I'd tell you. He said, "You're the worst band I've ever seen in my life." He said, "And somebody ought to tell you." And I started to, my bottom lip started to quiver. I know Ray Thomas came over to me and put his arm around me, and I could see a little tear in his eye. And then we were on the way home in our van, and nobody had said anything. But there's a little voice came from the back of our van, and it was Graham, our drummer. He was lying on the Mellotron, because that was a good place to be.
Okay, all right, barely. Yeah.
And he said, "He's right, that bloke, you know, he's right, we're rubbish."
That's what it took.
Literally the next day. Yeah, literally the next day, we were lousy at rhythm and blues. You know, by the time I joined, we were pretty lousy at it. But we were good at our own stuff. So we just gave that a go and gave it a couple of weeks, and it started to work for us.
Well, you always mentioned, too, there was just a series of what you called, and I love how you phrased this, a bunch of wonderful accidents, and one of which was Decca Records, who wanted to promote stereo to consumers, and you were kind of wrapped up in that in a very cool way.
We were, because Decca, London Records in America, Decca had their own consumer division. So they were keen on promoting their own radiograms and record players. And they really, because most of their catalog was classical music. They had the second largest classical catalog in the world, maybe still do, apart from Deutsche Grammophon, which had the largest. And their interest was in making long playing records, and they wanted to demonstrate really that stereo could be as interesting for rock and roll as it was for classical music. And we actually had a debt to them, I think left by some previous managers that were only around for a few months, but had taken an advance. And they approached us with this idea of juxtapositioning our music with kind of classical music. And it was Peter Knight and one of the executives from Decca who came up with this idea of making a theme around our songs. And we were very lucky. We were doing pretty much a stage show, which was kind of, Mike had written a song called Dawn Is a Feeling, which I loved. And I had Nights sometime before we recorded it for Decca. And everything just fell into place. And like you say, it was a series of wonderful kind of accidents, and the right people in Decca at that time, which were all kind of elderly gentlemen, but they understood that there's the possibilities of what we were about to do with this record. Yeah.
Well, I was going to say with Decca too, you know, you didn't give them exactly what they wanted, but that's what an artist is supposed to do. Okay. I get the roundabout about what you want, but this is our vision for it, and present it to them. And it they loved it. Eventually.
They did. Yeah, they did. They wanted a kind of rock version of Dvorak, whereas the orchestra would then come on after we'd finished playing, or just after our tracks and our rock version of Dvorak, and play the real Dvorak. And it was Peter Knight who came to see us at the 100 Club in Oxford Street, who heard our stuff and said, "You know, you boys, and I don't think you're going to get rock versions of Dvorak together, right, but your songs are really good." Yeah. He said, "Well, what about if we do it the other way around?" And that's what we did. We did our songs, and Peter Knight took those themes and weaved his kind of romantic magic, orchestral magic around that. Our stuff only took, you know, a day to a couple of days to record.
Right.
And but the orchestra on Days of Future Past was just one session, like 3 hour session. It's unbelievable, isn't it? How you can do this.
Crazy.
I don't know whether you could do that.
Now. No, you probably couldn't. Couldn't do it. You know, you've been touring all your life, and when you first started touring in America, at some point you toured with what was called at the time the CTA, it was the Chicago Transit Authority, which became Chicago. People loved the music at that time, but it was all about the fashion as well, especially in the 70s. And people loved what you wore on stage. I mean, you were setting trends.
Were we? Yeah, I know what you mean, because I think a lot of the American bands that we were mixing with and people in the business, that was one of their first, hey, where'd you get your gear from, man? You know, all this stuff. And but that was London. You know, London was a kind of fashion center. And I think we were lucky to have each other to say, that doesn't look very good, man, but that's good. You
know, that's funny.
That's a great thing about being in a group, isn't it?
We're talking to Justin Hayward. His new single is Living for Love. He's currently on tour, and we will spend some more time with this Rock and Roll Hall of Famer right after this on 720 WGN. Day player 720 WGN. We're talking to Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, Moody Blues lead guitarist, vocalist, and composer Justin Hayward. His new single is Living for Love. Question, The Voice, I Know You're Out There Somewhere, Your Wildest Dreams. These laid the foundation for the success story of the Moody Blues over the years. And my high school and college years were in the 1980s. So Your Wildest Dreams, I Know You're Out There Somewhere, both songs brought a new generation of fans to the band. It did for me.
I think that's right. Yeah, a lot of people were keen to kind of write us off after the 70s. We were apart for about 3 years in the 70s and kind of came back together in 78 different. Our record producer had left and his life had changed, and Mike Pinder had left the group, sadly, and I missed him very much. But I knew that the rest of us really wanted to carry on. But I think, you know, that this business is so transient, isn't it?
And very much so.
And I think, particularly in those days, it was assumed that you could really only be successful when between the ages of about 17 and 24. And past that, you didn't have much hope. But I think we were lucky in that we had a couple of great producers, Pip Williams, and then we met Tony Visconti. I met Tony Visconti doing a project for the he and I were doing a project for the BBC, and I knew that Tony was the guy to take us forward. And his sound really is the sound of Wildest Dreams, and I Know You're Out There Somewhere. What a gift his production style was. Mm-hmm. Fantastic.
But, you know, here's the thing, too, though. You know, some bands, and you know this, too, that in that era when rock and roll bands try to transform themselves into the 80s, into the 90s, they kind of lost their footing. They stepped away from the band that they were, and their sound was different. I think you guys always kept the soul to your music where you started.
I hope so. I think we did. Yeah, I think we did. And we were always ready to move with the times. I think the fact that we'd had that time apart in the 70s gave us all a chance to be something. The guys who wanted to remain together in the band gave us a chance to be something outside of the band and to really absorb other music and what was happening. And it's interesting about how your sort of philosophy of life, if you like, comes out in your music. And once you kind of live that out, it makes the music a bit more interesting. And we were very fortunate in the 80s to be with a great record company again. You know, I think the record company changed hands, so it became Polygram, I think. Yeah, I think Decca was bought out. But the guys that were with us then that heard Wildest Dreams were like, yes, I'm on board with this. And I think we knew as a group we had to just keep moving with our sound, keep the same spirit in there, but just keep moving with it. And we did, and American radio was there for us. It was just brilliant. Brilliant.
What time in your career, and especially with the Moody Blues, you know, whether you were performing in front of a live audience, whether you were recognized somewhere, like, what was that moment that you said, wow, like, we've really made something of this group? And it just kind of, it was that moment in your life that said, wow, we've made it.
Well, I think that happened to us in the 70s. It happened to me then, and we played Madison Square Garden twice in the same day.
Wow.
And we did two shows, one in the afternoon, one in the evening. And we weren't celebrities or personalities or anything, so nobody knew what we looked like. But in between these two shows, Ray and I went out on the street. And Ray saw this guy, a ticket tout. What do you call them? There,
scalper, yeah. Right? Yeah.
And Ray went up to him and just bought all his tickets for a couple of $100 or something.
Wow.
And then we just gave them away to people,
cool.
And they were like, "Oh, I love you, man! It's great."
Wow.
And nobody knew who we were, but we looked up. I remember distinctly the two of us standing there on the pavement. We looked up, and there's a giant sign with our name on it. We hadn't been out of the building to have a look, but there was this giant sign, and with our name on it. And we both said to each other, "Maybe we've made it."
You know, maybe.
Maybe we've made it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then we wanted to stay there.
Yeah, of course. Of course. No question. 1999, Knights in White Sand was inducted into the Grammy Hall of Fame, but it was 2018, the Moody Blues, long overdue, inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. What did that mean to you?
It was like a big sigh of relief, I think, for the Moody, people who love the Moody Blues music. It was kind of obvious, you know, and I so wanted the Moody's fans to have what they wanted. And that was it, really. And God, it was such a pleasure for us. And, you know, for us, the Cars and Bon Jovi on that day.
Yeah.
And it was great for the Moody Blues fans. It was just brilliant. And for us, of course, it was, I'm so glad that we all came together. We'd lost Ray in the months before that, who'd passed on, but Mike was there, and we were able to just kind of give each other a hug and
that's great.
Celebrate ourselves around that whole event and what it meant to the Moody's fans and what it meant for our music. It was great.
Well, the Moody Blues have sold 70 million albums worldwide, 18 platinum and gold LPs, and you can check out some very cool things at moodyblues.com. And to follow what Justin is up to, visit justinhayward.com. His new single is Living for Love. Justin, thank you for spending such a long period of time with us tonight. I know you're going to have fun on this tour.
Thank you, Dave. Yeah, I absolutely will. I just, to be with my crew and my musicians as well. You know, we're a quiet group of people, but that's kind of the way it's about the songs.
Right.
And that's the way we like it.
Justin Hayward of the Moody Blues. All right, much more ahead here on 720 WGN.